has been meeting in closed session, and no action was taken to report out. Next is Pledge of Allegiance to the flag. Dr. Murray, would you mind leading us tonight? Next is approval of the minutes. Are there any additions or corrections to the minutes? Hearing none, I see that Ms. Hernandez has made the motion and Ms. Carey has seconded it. Would you please vote? Oops, I didn't vote too. Okay, 5 ayes. 4 ayes, excuse me. And I should mention that Ms. Henry is excused tonight. Time for board committee reports and activities.
Been busy, but I'll keep it brief. Two things I wanted to highlight. I attended Ocean View's mental health fair at the end of last month. And so this was actually a newer program where the AP students held the tables. And so they took what they learned in their psychology classes and then had different groups of students come in and learn about CPT and some other different, you know, mental health strategies across two different classes. And so really well attended and very thoughtful, and so I'm very appreciative for our AP science teacher over there. And then second, I finally got to live my dream of being a Shark Tank judge with the SciVax mobile service program. And I have to say, I was so inspired. And I'm always inspired with SciVax, but especially with these students who are juniors pitching their idea. One of them was a boat cleaning service, and they were explaining that they were already scuba certified so that they could clean those boats in the water. I just think we would never hear of how smart they are. So in addition to all the other things we have been doing, it's just incredible to see what our students are learning in the classroom and how they're applying it.
It has been busy. I wanted to mention a couple of things. The new teacher colloquium, which I think all of us participated in. But that's always such a satisfying event to participate in. And I'm always so pleased with our teachers and the progress they've made. And it's such a nice feeling to know that our kids are being instructed by such qualified individuals who really care about them as individuals. And secondly, I did participate in CSBA's their May Revise. And I wanted to say I thought it was one of the best done webinars that I participated in, because it was so clear. It was very concise, and yet it was very clear, and there wasn't a lot of discussion among the presenters as they're presenting. I just thought it was excellent. And finally, I had a chance to participate again this year in the senior exit interviews at Westminster, and that's always a fun event. And it's so nice to know that those kids are going out into the world so well prepared and so happy with the education that they receive and feeling so good about themselves and what they're able to do. So that's an event I always enjoy.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, there's been just so many things. And along with what Dr. Dishnow just said, you know, I did the exit interviews as well. And between those, all of the performances that we've had, our awards ceremony, especially the senior awards, you know, meetings and banquets, I just want to do a shout-out to our staff, our teachers, and our classified staff. Wow. I mean, they are top flight. And I know one of the things I just, you know, really love our senior awards, and I'm going to talk about Westminster. There was not a parking spot. People were parking off campus, and in the gym, they have all the seniors that sit down on the floor. The stands were absolutely packed. People were standing on the side. And what was so incredible, I think that every single student at Westminster High School has earned something. I mean, the cord or whatever, going into the military, they recognized everything. And as Dr. Vishno said, those ceremonies, whether it was, in Alpha or, the Fountain Valley, are so positive, and the students have so many good comments and are so thankful for the, education that they've received. And the parents are just really, again, so positive about everything. So I just want to give a huge shout out to everyone that's involved in that. And, from here at our administrator at the district office, down to the classroom, to the, people who greet, at the morning, and say hello to them. I mean, that's what makes it so wonderful. But it is just so exciting here, and I just want to say thank you to our staff.
And the thousands of people in our community.
Yes.
The
volunteers
amazing.
As well. Oh, that was, and with the breakfast and things that we've had. So, it takes a village. I know that's a cliche, but it's true.
So, well, I'll just report on two things. And one is the evacuation of Westminster, Garden Grove, and Stanton. And the fact that you were on duty 24/7 because you refused to go to bed, as did Ryan Hasegawa and the rest. It was an amazing support from this entire school district, both for our people who were involved, but some of our own students and staff, and student staff and classmates staff were all involved in being evacuated, as well as then coming and helping. So it's pretty incredible. The several times that I went over there, it was running so smoothly, and I can't say enough about that. So we've already talked about the fact that next time we should honor all these people, including you, for all that was done. And the other thing is Delegate Assembly. Oh my gosh, we were so busy at this Delegate Assembly meeting in terms of all that was going on, and really trying to raise the standards and to say to the state of California, you have a responsibility. And as we know from our board packets, we have both a letter to be signed individually by us. In there, if we're in agreement to do it, but also a resolution to go forward to the Senate and Assembly in terms of you guys need to put your act together. It can't all fall at the state district level. And the other piece of Delegate Assembly, I'll have some questions when we get to our budget, but the budget, it's like, I don't know how many more machinations the governor and legislature can do to Prop 98, but we're probably going to end up in another lawsuit because they're still playing around with it. And the other thing is putting in a whole new program that's essentially unfunded and one-time money, and what it looks like is that we're getting a whole pile of bucks. So I'll speak more about that later when I ask questions, because you just know I'm going to ask. Thank you very much. The next thing on the agenda is our public communication to the board. And I think the person that has asked to speak probably has heard this once or twice before, but essentially the agenda provides members of the public the opportunity to address the board regarding agenda items before or during the time that the board's consideration of that item. The agenda also provides members of the public an opportunity to address the board at regular meetings on matters which are not on the specific agenda, but are within the scope of the subject matter jurisdiction of the board. The board may not take any action, nor can we respond to the public comments at the time that they're made. Anyone desiring to address the board should have filled out a yellow card. If you don't mind, I've only got one yellow card, and so I won't go on and read the rest of it because I think you all know that. But Briston Davy. Briston is the, I don't know that she's here. She phoned in her her request. When she comes, we'll recognize her. How does that work?
She's running late from work. She texted about 20 minutes ago.
Oh, okay. I haven't gotten your text, so thank you. Okay, so when we come back around, when I see her come through the door, or if you do, Dr. Smith, give me a hand. That would be great. And we'll call on her at an appropriate time within the agenda then. Okay, well, that was for naught. Okay, then we come to the superintendent's report. Dr. Ogata, I know you've been all over the place for the last few weeks, so tell us about what you've been up to and whatever.
Well, all I'd like to say is congratulations to the class of 2026. This week is going to be just such a great culmination with our graduations in the next couple of days, and congratulations to all of our students. And it's really because of the hard work and dedication of all staff coming together to support our students. So thank you very much to everyone involved, and we'll be at all the graduations, and it's just the best week.
The bell's on.
That's right.
Okay, lovely. Thank you. Okay, next then we have the staff report from Business Services. Tracy Green, the Assistant Superintendent of Business Services, will present an outline of key assumptions and components of the 26-27 proposed budget prior to the public hearing. And so following your commentary, Mrs. Green will have the public hearing.
Good evening, President Castry, trustees, Dr. Ogata, and staff. Thank you for the opportunity to present the May revised and multi-year budget. Governor Newsom released his May budget revision on May 14th. Although there is a lot of excitement around the increased estimated revenues and additional LCFF investments, structural deficits continue to persist under the administration's estimates and proposals because ongoing revenues are outpaced by ongoing expenditures. The economic outlook. The May revision estimate of revenues across a three-year budget window, which is 2024-25 through 2026-27, are higher by about $16.5 billion, and this improves the budget bottom line. This upgrade in revenues is mostly attributed to personal income tax collections driven by enthusiasm around artificial intelligence, AI, and the related stock market boom. Continued growth in personal income tax surrounding AI seems unlikely to continue at the current pace. But you never know, though, because some high-profile technology IPOs could bring another short-term bump. One thing to note is that California's tax structure is highly dependent on stock market earnings, and technology sector downturns have historically caused significant revenue losses. Inflation remains high and sensitive to external pressures. Economists describe the labor market as stable but paralyzed. Hiring activity has slowed, and reduced job openings suggest businesses are cautious about future growth. California's unemployment rate continues to be higher at 5.4% compared to the U.S. national rate of 4.3%. And geopolitical instability is increasing oil and gasoline prices, creating inflation pressures. This year's governor's May revision had a mix of great news as well as a few areas to be cautious about. The revised budget balances both the 2026-27 and 2027-28 fiscal years. This means that cumulative resources available must not exceed cumulative expenditures across the three-year budget window. The May revision achieves this by relying on one-time resources and spent money from prior years and use of reserve. Over the last 3 years, the state had used $20 billion from the budget stabilization account. Also, budget solutions rely heavily on continued revenue growth and economic stability. This balanced budget may seem great at first, but as the Legislative Analysis Office, ALO's office, pointed out, structural deficits remain because the state's ongoing revenues are higher than the ongoing expenditures. A budget is structurally balanced when revenues collected in a given fiscal year are sufficient to cover expenditures planned for that same year. So in other words, the state is deficit spending. The administration estimate shows deficit spending of roughly $10 billion annually from 2026-27 through 2029-30. And beginning in 2027-28 year, these deficits represent the ongoing gap that would need to be addressed in future budgets. Proposition 98. Proposition 98 establishes a constitutionally required minimum funding level for California's public schools and community colleges. It is commonly known as the minimum guarantee. The May revision increases the minimum guarantee by $3.7 billion. However, this means that the Prop 98 minimum guarantee is still underfunded by $3.9 billion with the governor's settle-up proposal. So the governor's Prop 98 settle-up proposal does not adjust for COLA or ADA, and so that causes future years' minimum guarantee to be reduced. To give context to what this $3.9 million underfunding of Prop 98 means to the school district, School Services of California calculated that if the 25-26 Prop 98 is fully funded in the current year and allocated to districts on an equal per ADA basis, that means districts would receive approximately $654 more per ADA. But for our district, that would mean $8.4 million. So, also with new commitments for the governor's May revision, a few new commitments for the May revisions that will pertain to our district include the Student Support Professional Development Discretionary Block Grant has increased to $5 billion. So this is estimated at $936.98 per ADA, which would be roughly $12 million for our district. It also restores the $757.3 million of the Learning Recovery Emergency Block Grant and large university. And just to note, we were given this allocation few years ago with original LREBG allocation, and then we were reduced. And this is actually just restoring what we were supposed to get years ago. And also, special education AB 602 base grant was increased to $1,340 per funded AD. So this is a big increase from the proposed $999 per funded ADA back in January, which I'm excited for. But I also recognize that districts are still being underfunded in this area. And of course, there's a new mandate of the 14-week paid pregnancy disability. The 26-27 COLA. As you can see by this slide, that the cost of living adjustment, also known as COLA, ranged from 3.09% just a year ago. Then at the January proposed budget, it was at 2.51%. Followed by a spring estimate of 2.41%. And now it's currently at 2.87% for statutory COLA and 1.44% of additional LCFF investment for a total of 4.31%. Just to note that the additional LCFF investment shall cover the cost of the new mandate 14-week paid pregnancy disability. And then COLA is proposed at 3.3% for 27-28 and 3.09% for 28-29. Included in this slide is our projected student enrollment, our average daily attendance, also known as EDA, and our prior three-year average in which we are funded on. With this slide, it shows that our student enrollment and ADA continues to project a downward trend for declining enrollment. From 2025 to 2026, we anticipate 260 fewer students, as represented by the blue bars. And student enrollment from 26 to 27 is estimated to decrease by 263 students. And from 27 to 28, an additional decrease of 163 students. This is a total of 686 projected less students over the 3 years. The green bars represent the average daily attendance, or ADA. ADA is the number of students who come to school each day, and we average 94% of our students attending the school on any given day. Fortunately, we're still able to take advantage of the prior three-year attendance average, and this is shown by the red bars. The three-year attendance average creates a softer landing as we decline enrollment as a student. Proposed base grant. So this is what we should receive based on the COLA increase. Start with a 25-26 unadjusted base grant. It was $12,423, an increase of 2.8% statutory COLA for 26-27 is applying, which is $357 increase. An additional increase of 1.44% of the augmentation is applied to the unadjusted base grant, which is $179 increase. We also receive a grade span adjustment of $337 per ADA, which is a $14 increase compared to the 25-26 grade span adjustment. This brings our total 26-27 adjusted base grant to $13,295. We also receive a 20% supplemental grant based on our unduplicated pupil percentage, which comes out to be $1,434 ADA. This amount must be used towards the district's LCAP contributing goals and actions that Dr. Herrera will cover later this evening. This brings our total 2026-27 adjusted base grant and supplemental grant $14,730 per ADA. This slide represents a multi-year budget. Let's first look at our anticipated 26-27 budget. The beginning balance is $76.1 million. This is the projected ending balance from 25-26. That includes both unrestricted and restricted funds. It did increase from secondary loans due to adjustments for vacant positions, a $1.5 million prior year adjustments to LCFS allocation, approximately $4.8 million of plan expenditures that will not be completed in 25-26 for facility projects and textbooks that will be removed to 26-27. Even with the estimated adjustments, the $76.1 million beginning balance is still a reduction from the prior year's $83.9 million beginning balance. This illustrates that the district is deficit spending, so we do need to be mindful since deficit spending will decrease the ending fund balance. The ending fund balance, which becomes next year's beginning fund balance, is one-time funds that should not be used for ongoing expenditures. I wanted to mention this at this time. The 26-27 beginning balance is still an estimate, as we will not know the true beginning balance until August in the 25-26 fiscal year. The revenues, was set at a total of 4.31%, increases our LCFS revenue. Enrollment is projected to decrease by 260 students from the prior year. This brings our revenues to $275.4 million. Expenditures overall, expenses are $283.2 million. Included in expenses is a 7% increase to health and welfare costs. Death and longevity for all employees are included. PERS remain constant at 19.1%, and PERS is at a slight decrease from 26.81 to 26.4%. The fund balance is the revenues less expenditures. It is a negative fund balance of $7.8 million. This does reflect deficit spending. We're spending one-time funds on a kitchen upgrade, professional development, and facilities maintenance on the restricted fund. And then the ending balance is the beginning balance plus fund balance. It's also next year's beginning balance of $68.1 million. The components of the ending fund balance include a non-spendable account of $75,000 that includes our petty cash funds and prepaid vouchers. The restricted balance are reserve funds identified for a specific program or operations, $6.2 million. The committed balances, these are one-time funds that are district earmarked for specific programs or operations that include both short-term and long-term plans, including technology, mandate funds, uninsured litigation contingency, textbooks and instructional materials, HVAC and facilities projects, long-term debt contingency, and compensated absences. It's a combined total of $39 million. The assigned amount includes a set-aside of $250,000 to cover the mandated 14-week paid pregnancy disability. We just start at that because we're not foolish what that's going to look like for us next year. And the economic uncertainty is 3% of the expenses, which comes out to be $8.5 million. The unappropriate amount, the unencumbered one-time funds are at $14.3 million. Reserves are at 8.05%. For years 2 and 3, looking at years 2 and 3 of our multi-year budget, multi-year projections are made up of individual budgets based on current assumptions for the May revise. Here are a few items that are noticeable changes. So COLA, the revenues, COLA for 27-28 is projected to be higher at 3.3% when it was projected back in January to be at 3.06%. And for 27-28, it's projected to be lower at 3.09% when it was projected to back in January. As mentioned earlier, enrollment is projected to decrease from 263 students in year 2 and another 163 students in year 3. The declining enrollment results in revenues not increasing at the same rate as the COLA. For example, a 3.3% COLA for 27-28 combined with the declining enrollment of 263 students results in only a 1.22% revenue increase. For 28-29, a 3.09 COLA and declining enrollment of 163 students will result in a 0.74% revenue. So the reduction in revenues for years 2 and 3 are due to the one-time funds in 26-27 that are not continuing in subsequent years. Expenses, we continue to budget for the health and welfare at 7%, staff and column, longevity, and other operating costs are accounted for. The fund balance is are negative, and we continue to deficit spend. With that, it's important that we continue our efforts towards matching our staffing to enrollment and explore possible areas of reductions that will have the least impact to our students. The components of the ending fund balance shows the following. Non-spendable is the same at $75,000. Restricted balances decrease as we continue to spend the categorical one-time fund. As you can see, we plan to fully expend the one-time funds by the end of the year. Committed funds at this time are the same as the 26-27 year, as well as the assigned amount for the 14-week pregnancy disability. The reserves are met. The reserves meet the 3% state requirement, and this is our multi-year budget. As required by the county Orange County Department of Education and the state, this is the legal requirement language. It is important that we continue our efforts towards matching our staffing to enrollment and explore possible areas of reduction that will have the least impact to our students. Road ahead. The governor's budget will go through the Assembly and the Senate and be signed by June 15th. The budget then goes back to the governor to be signed before June 30th. We most likely will see maybe some changes to the budget as it goes through this process. We will see if we will be impacted by any potential federal funding cuts. At the moment, Title II, Supporting Effective Instruction, Title III, English Learners, Title III, Immigrant Students, and Title IV, Student Support and Academic Enrichment, are up for elimination or combined into a block grant. The estimated total for these funds at this time is $732,000. This is Governor Newsom's last year, so we will see who will become California's next governor. And of course, uncertainty usually occurs as a new governor takes. And reforming education governance in California. There is a proposal to establish the role of an education commissioner appointed by the governor to manage the California Department of Education, CDE, beginning January 1st of 2027. Superintendent of Public Instruction would retain a small office and become a voting member of the State Board of Education and the Board of Governors of the California Community College. The proposal does not assign any specific duties to the Superintendent of Public Instruction, but suggests the position could work on coordination and advocacy. The governor's budget does not include additional funding for the commissioner position or the Superintendent of Public Instruction staff, so we will see what this is going to look like. Before we close, just a recap of concerns that, in my view, is worth repeating. Even though you may have already heard it tonight. With the May revision, personal income has significantly increased. However, this growth does not appear to be sustainable. California's tax structure is highly dependent on stock market earnings, and the technology sector downturns have historically caused significant revenue losses. More new commitments, such as one-time funds for the discretionary block grant, learning recovery, block grant, more funds is great, but these are one-time funds that should be spent on one-time expenses. The mandate 14-week paid pregnancy disability leave. This we're going to need to set aside funds from the LCFS, additional 1.44% additional investment. go towards this mandate. The state multi-year budget shows structural deficits are projected to continue at roughly $10 billion annually from 2026-27 through 29-30. And so beginning with the 27-28 year, those deficits represent the ongoing gap that we need to be addressed in future budgets. And Prop 98, the minimum guarantee, is $3.9 billion underfunded in 25-26. So this Prop 98 settle-up will negatively impact school funding as it will reduce funding in future years. The district is currently deficit spending, so it would deplete our ending fund balance if we do not. We need to right-size staffing across all employee groups. The district must continue to cut spending habits as part of the COVID one-time funds, and now more one-time funds are ending. That includes BCG grants and educator effectiveness. And staff. The 2026-27 adopted budget report will be presented for approval at the next board meeting on June 30th. I grant the Superintendent Algada and her continued support. I also extend gratitude to all those who did diligently to help provide this report and safeguard our family.
Thank you very much. Questions from the board, please?
I don't even know where to begin. This is like smoke and mirrors all over again.
It's a lot this time.
You know, one of the things that bothers me the most is this idea of COLA. So, you said, as it stands now, we're supposed to get a 4.31% COLA. But 1.44% of that is, it's already spent. Well, again, it comes to cover a cost of a new program, providing, what is it, 14 weeks of disability, pregnancy disability leave? And how do you even begin to project how much of that you're going to need for the upcoming year? I'm venting a little bit here, but where I want to go is 4.31 minus the 1.44, because I'm sure we will spend all of that, and I can't believe there won't be major lawsuits filed against the state of California over that. So now we're down to 2.87.
Yeah.
2.87. As a percent, what does our step and column cost us every year? Just to maintain our salary schedules without any raises, just step and column.
It's off the top of my head, amongst the categories, is a little over 2%.
2%.
Okay.
And what about our health and welfare increases?
I budgeted at 7% annually.
So as a percentage of our, wait a minute, we've only got 2.87% to start with.
And it's not much.
Yeah. So it continues to amaze me how the legislature and the governor can present budgets for adoption that propose at first glance to do something good for schools, but they're really, yeah, I don't think the public generally understands any of this. I think they just see those schools are getting more money that should cover their inflationary expenses, and we all know what inflation is going to be like this next year.
The money we got is one time.
The Prop 98 settle up. That's like saying, you know what, I'd like to hire you next year for an administrative position, and we'll pay you X number of dollars, but, you know, I'm not sure I'm going to have enough money. So instead of paying you your full salary, I'm going to keep part of it, and if I have enough left over next year, I'll give it back to you. Who would accept a job like that? But yet that's what they do to schools consistently and constantly. So anyway, I'm just concerned this district, we have always maintained appropriate reserves so that we don't find ourselves in the position that so many districts did back in, I want to say, 2008. At that time, I was working for STRS, and I was counseling people on retirement. And I remember all the teachers that I sat across from and administrators who were crying because they wanted to know if they could eat if they could somehow take part of their retirement income just to get them, just to get them through their present expenses. It doesn't work that way. This district's always been very conservative, and because of that, we've been able to pay all of our bills. But I see our reserves going down. I see deficit spending continuing. So I'm just venting. It's just a concern, and I will be happy to write a letter to the legislature about what they're doing. But I don't know if they'll pay any attention to it.
Will they? I'm not so sure of that.
Maybe not.
Yeah. This is the third year that he's come up with these wacky ideas. I don't understand the 1.44 either, and I know I did ask Dr. O'Brien about it. If you don't spend it this first year, would you have to give it back, or can you bank it? And there's no way that Dr. Kishno said that you can ever predict your cost on that. It's just, pie in the sky. It's amazing to me that they would come up with something like that, another unfunded mandate, because as Dr. Kishno just said, if I have come across this with my friends, and they follow education a little closer because they were former teachers, but they think that we're getting this 4.31%, and it's like manna from heaven, and I have to explain to them, well, it's not, and we're not even going to barely make it, with the 2.8, let alone 4.31. It's so frustrating. This whole thing. We meet four times on this a year and talk about it, and every time it's different. And how you could run a household on that, or a business on that, or anything. It's just beyond me.
I think to answer your first question is if we have to return it, no. We'll fall out of any fund balance. The district will be on the hook for the full cost.
Forever.
Correct. Ongoing.
Ongoing. Yeah.
Even if the funding doesn't cover it?
Correct.
Like Dr. Kishno mentioned, I'm sure Dr. Castro mentioned it, there's going to be lawsuits, because this is just addressing women's significant others who want to take time off with that.
They're still getting information, waiting for information. On this, we only have limited information that was given so far. So at this moment, it's just on the numbers.
So they haven't thought through it either. That's what you're saying?
I don't think so.
What a surprise.
I honestly don't know what their thought is with this, but. Yeah.
Okay.
Section Y, is that amount called COLA instead of something else?
The
1.44. Like, why was it put in that category?
They put it in there as far as the calculation. That's what a lot of people are calling it, super COLA. Many are not referring to that because it was in this earmark for this mandate.
It's not a COLA, because a COLA is supposed to be an ongoing.
This would be one time.
Right.
My understanding is that it's the 1.44%. We'll increase our fee. So that would be the on part. We're not going to get that 1.44 next year and the year after that. No.
But it would be the math again that you brought up about the cost of living increase, but how that counteracts with the decrease in attendance.
Yeah. So. Oftentimes, our decrease in students doesn't cover the increase in COLA. So, for 27-28, COLA is 3.3%. But once I inputted the calculation with the negative 263 students, the actual revenue increase that we get is 1.22%. Okay. And then the year after that, COLA is 3.9%, and we're reducing by another 163 students, so then that results in an increase that's not even 1%.
And as we're looking at the cost of living increase, we're talking salary, but for us, because we offer the health care, that's separate, but it's part of the total compensation?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Well, in a sense, if employees were having to pay for the health and welfare, right now it would be like a 7%
increase. And is 7% enough? I know I've been hearing from other healthcare that the 11%. How confident do you feel with the 7% estimation?
I feel confident with the 7% only because our increase, the increase is well in that calendar year, and our fiscal year is from July 1st through 30th.
But it does go up more than we anticipated,
and
we would eat the cost in the next, our next fiscal year.
We would have to make the adjustment in person.
Yeah,
then we'll find out.
Okay,
that's why first interim is more important.
Yeah.
That's when we adjust to our actual ending balances and in actual rates that we find out.
Okay, so I need clarification on that because it was my understanding that last year it went up 11, almost 12%, but we budgeted on 7%, which we have forever, so it was a really shock to us to find out that it was 11%, but we haven't looked at 11%. We're still leaving it at 7 and hoping for the best. Is that what I'm hearing?
So the 11% is really from January through December, so close to 12%. We're hitting the increase on 6 months because from July through December, it's still at the current rate, and then from January to June is the increase rate. The 7% should be enough, but then we actually true up our numbers for our first interim.
Okay, I guess I look at it on a yearly basis.
Yeah.
You know,
our plans.
I'm the company, the medical insurance company, and I send us a bill. I'm going to send us a bill for the whole year, and if it's 12%, then I know that. For us, but still, on the long run, looking at next year or the year after, it's not 7. It's really
for the whole year.
Yeah.
It's just our plan year for health coverage starts in June.
Okay. So I guess that's what I'm asking. So, are we going to put that in for next year at a higher rate?
So if it does come in at a higher rate, we should find that out by first interim time, and during that time, that's when we'll make our adjustments. We make our adjustments every interim.
One other question. On the ADA and enrollment slide, showing the reduction in decline in enrollment and ADA, does this come from our demographers?
Yes.
Did they provide this information?
They did.
And you feel confident?
Last year we were only off by under 100 for sure. So we've been doing pretty good.
Thank you.
Give us a moderate projection as well as a limited projection. So what I do is I take the average, and that's been working.
So how did we do on this year? Their projection versus.
It was probably the closest that I've had since been here.
Thank you.
But we'll know for sure in September.
So, and you had asked a question about what our ongoing was somewhere in here, and I've been running through my full budget, Mrs. Green, because we got the whole budget. My memory is that it's 18%, and so if that's off, when I get home, I'll call you up and let you know that. 18% for costs, for ongoing costs, it's step and column, and insurance, and all the additional things. But I can't find it, sorry. I'm hunting. Next time I'll mark it. I'm sure it will.
One last question. I think I'm in full support of funding our staff, and especially it's a big point of pride about in the healthcare benefits, especially given what we know. Other places and making sure that we're taken care of. So knowing that we're in this structural deficit, what are the steps that we as a district are taking to help lower costs in other areas?
We have to look at areas of spending, areas there's like materialized certain things, or maybe step back in different areas that And of course, we'll have to look at staffing each one for the cost of staffing to get and classified. There's other areas too, sometimes staff development, for example. We do great work with staff development. Maybe it's instead of like three conferences, maybe another one. Different other areas, of course, like that's where I work in special ed, they get an increase, so we kind of want to know Doug did a great job of staffing on that office. That could be an area of high cost. But we do a really good job. And just different things that comes out that we can kind of so we don't want to cut in areas that
couple of things. Are we getting our money from the federal government timely? Because you're concerned at Coast to Coast and that the funding was not coming yet.
With the federal funding, I always found even before the whole credit cut. So it's still as timely as it is.
Just a little iffy.
Yeah. that a lot of times with the Title I and Title II, like, 3 and 4 funding, you don't get funding as
which is another stressor on our budget then as we go forward.
No business would run it like this one.
So we're really looking at some pretty tight times again.
Yeah.
Not that they've ever been really great, but they're getting tighter again.
Getting tighter, but the uncertainty surrounding who's going to be new governor, happening on the federal level, political. Just a lot of uncertainty. It's a little more difficult.
One of the things I always remember from my colleague Ron Bennett, who of course has been gone for several years now, is that you don't spend one-time money on something that eats.
Right.
You only spend it on stuff.
Yeah. One time.
Right. I like stuff better. Mrs. Green, thank you so much. We've really put you through the hoops tonight, but it's so important that we really understand. Because when we go out into the classrooms and people ask us what's going on, we need to also be able to express what's really happening at the state and the federal level with our budget. So thank you.
Thank you.
We'll move now to the public hearing for the proposed budget. A public hearing for the 26-27 proposed budget will be held now. The hearing will please come to order. Is there anyone who wishes to speak to the public hearing for the budget? Seeing nobody jumping up, the public hearing is closed. Okay, I see that you have arrived, so if my colleagues don't mind, would it be okay if we go back to public hearing? Public speaking? Okay, you know the rules. 3 minutes. Kristen, please come forward, and thank you for all your service for so many years with PTSA, and thank you.
You're welcome. Hello, everyone. For those who do not know me, I've proudly served in parent leadership in our community schools for more than 12 years, and more recently in child advocacy. At this Huntington Beach Unified High School District Board meeting, I wanted to reflect on the hundreds of meetings, connections, and opportunities I experienced through my volunteer PTA, PTO, PTSA, and council roles in our district. I want to use my 3 minutes to speak openly about the importance of staying involved in your children's lives on campus. Kind of expected there to be a lot more people here to hear what I was going to say. I'm sorry. Great. I hope to make clear the value of connecting with other families and sharing the work of supporting children as a community. PTA is a trusted part of America's public education system, partnering with parents, families, educators, and communities to support the education, welfare, health, and safety of all children. PTA has helped create programs and services that improve children's lives and deserves a world-class education that prepares them for college and careers. I believe this aligns directly with the HBUHSD's college and career-ready goals. PTA believes in health and safety. Every child deserves a healthy, safe place to live, learn, and thrive. A child has never any of our districts. PTA believes in arts and culture. Every child deserves a well-rounded education with access to arts. Through programs like Reflections, PTA promotes arts education and gives students opportunities to explore and participate in the arts. Westminster High School is a killer on the Reflections program every year. Finally, PTA works in advocacy, ensuring all families have a voice and tools to advocate for every child through policy, training, and resources. It fuels awareness of campus needs and connections with the people who supported my child every day. It also taught me that parenting extends beyond our children. Our community is our future, and these kids need our steady, unconditional support. I've also volunteered beyond the schools, and I'm grateful for every moment, but what I wanted to leave you tonight with is that even though many of the HBUHSD students are older, we still need your involvement, your presence, your unconditional support more now than ever. With graduation on Thursday for my daughter, and new presidents installed at both the PTSA and council levels I have volunteered on, this season comes to a joyful close for me. To the HBUSA chair, Dr. Ogata, our school board, and all of the supportive district staff, I just wanted to thank you for your support. Always seeing you at meetings is really, really helpful. It's been an honor. And to all the parents of the school-aged children who continue showing up at their campuses and communities while balancing the demands of daily life in 2026, I commend you.
Thank you very much. Thanks for joining us tonight. Okay, we'll move now to item 5, which is Ed Services and staff presentation on the Local Control Accountability Plan. Dr. Herrera, thank you. I should say that the LCAP that we had in our background was about 2 inches versus the one that we're going to be going through right now. So thank you for preparing both.
Of course, the presentation slide tonight provides a little bit of a summary around the work that we did for the LCAP this year. So good evening, President Castri, Board of Trustees, Dr. Ogata, staff, and guests. My name is Amy Herrera, and I thank you for this opportunity to speak with you tonight about the 2026-27 Local Control and Accountability Plan. Tonight is the public hearing for the proposed LCAP, and the plan will return to board later this month for final adoption. So the LCAP serves as the district's roadmap for continuous improvement. Before highlighting the plan itself this evening, I'd like to thank all who contributed to this year-long process. Their feedback helped shape both the priorities and the actions included in this plan. Each group brings a unique perspective that helps us identify strengths, recognize areas for improvement, and to better understand the needs of our students and school communities. That is our engagement of educational partners. This year actually marks year 3 of our current 3-year LCAP cycle. As a result, you'll notice that most goals and actions remain consistent, allowing us to continue refining and deepening the work already underway while maintaining a focus on long-term improvement efforts. This slide provides a high-level overview of the structure of the district's LCAP. The plan includes 4 goals, 32 actions, and 56 metrics used to monitor progress towards our priorities. Throughout this presentation, I'm going to be highlighting our areas of success, opportunities for continued growth, and the themes that emerged from our educational partner engagement process. There's a lot on this slide here, but this represents our 32 actions within our 4 goal areas. Goal 1 focuses on the core systems that support teaching and learning. Goal 2 focuses on programs and services that promote academic achievement and college and career readiness. Goal 3 focuses on wellness, school climate, and conditions that support student success. And goal 4 is Valley Vista High School's Equity Multiplier Goal, which provides additional targeted support designed to improve outcomes for students attending Valley. We'll start with goal 1, and in this area, we continue to celebrate our graduation rate. In 2025, our district's graduation rate increased to 94.3%, exceeding both county and state averages. This really reflects the efforts of our school, staff, and support system to ensure that students remain on track towards earning a diploma. We also continue to see positive trends in A2G completion, with a 58.9% rate in 2025. A2G coursework, as we've been discussing, is designed to prepare students for college and career opportunities while keeping post-secondary options open. And as a metric for our state, it remains an important indicator of student readiness for life after high school. Educational partners throughout our discussions emphasize the importance of helping students prepare for their future, whether it be through college, career pathways, military service, or other post-secondary opportunities. And we think that the successes shown here reflect that shared commitment. This slide shows the Smarter Balanced State testing results and the percent of students meeting or exceeding standards over time. We are represented by the blue line, our district. And then we have Orange County overall is orange, it's Orange County. And the blue line, and the green line is California. While our district continues to perform above state and county averages, we did experience a slight decline in ELA last year. We did experience a slight increase in math. We recognize the importance of continuing to strengthen academic outcomes for all students. And there's an interest in maintaining outcomes that outperform and outpace the others. But mostly, we want to ensure that students are receiving an education in our system with the access and opportunity to achieve at high levels and continue to make meaningful progress. Through professional learning, collaboration, and continued development of our multi-tier systems of support, MTSS, we're working to ensure that students have both access and opportunities to achieve at high levels. In Goal 2, one area of significant progress was English learner achievement. On the English Learner Progress Indicator, 42.9% of English learners were shown to make progress towards proficiency, resulting in improvement from red to yellow performance level on the California dashboard this year. We all continue to see outstanding performance in advanced placement courses. Our district students achieved an 85% AP exam pass rate in 2025, and as you can see, it's significantly exceeding state and national averages. In Goal 2, we have specific actions that support various student groups. We saw meaningful gains in graduation rates among English learners, students with disabilities, and foster youth. These improvements reflect the impact of targeted support and the dedication of staff to work closely with us today. We were encouraged to see progress on the English Learner Progress Indicator, which reflects the impact of our continued investments in English learner support, professional learning, designated and integrated ELD, progress monitoring and targeted intervention, growing out these things that are actions in the LCAP. And while we celebrate this improvement, we recognize there's still work to do and we'll continue to prioritize English learner success this upcoming year. Another of this is college and career readiness. While A through G completion rates have steadily increased over time, we know that there's still students who benefit from additional support to remain on track to maximize their options. So the district will continue to strengthen efforts through a comprehensive school counseling model, expanded college and career exploration opportunities, continued work with career technical education pathways, dual enrollment, advanced placement and international baccalaureate programs, and other supports that help students identify and pursue their goals. Under Goal 3 focuses on wellness and creating a climate that supports student success. One notable success in the district is the district's continued low suspension rate, which has maintained green performance level on the California dashboard now for 3 consecutive years. We also saw improvements in our dropout rate, which decreased from 6.4% to 2.8%. Additionally, annual LCAP survey results continue to demonstrate strong favorable ratings related to wellness supports and well-being for all stakeholders. Educational partners emphasize the importance of maintaining strong wellness programs, safe and welcoming campuses, and learning environments that support 21st century teaching and learning. They also identified attendance as an important area of continued focus. We know that attendance is directly connected to academic achievement, engagement, and overall student success. And while attendance rates have improved from the post-pandemic lows, we have not yet returned to our pre-pandemic levels. Our priorities in Goal 3 align closely with our ongoing commitment to ensuring that every student feels known, supported, and connected to our name-based story philosophy. Goal
full four specific to Valley Vista High School. This reflects both the equity multiplier and comprehensive support and improvement funding priorities. These resources provide additional opportunities to support students through targeted interventions, enhanced academic support systems, and expanded wellness services. For 26-27, Valley Vista will continue focusing on student support systems, and they will be maintaining while expanding targeted interventions through the addition of a reading specialist. As Valley Vista continues its WASP self-study process, many of these efforts are becoming integrated into the school's broader improvement planning and long-term vision for success. What we heard. So throughout the LCAP process, educational partners consistently emphasize what they value most about our district. They describe a district where strong relationships, a culture of care, and support for the whole child remain central to our work. They highlighted the wide range of academic, career, and extracurricular opportunities available to students, as well as the importance of student voice, ownership, and flexible pathways. Educational partners also expressed pride in our safe and welcoming schools, strong communication, and a deep sense of community that exists within our district. All these themes are represented in our LCAP, acknowledging the features of our district of which we are most proud. And we are so fortunate to have such a dedicated group of educational partners to contribute to our process, whether through the LCAP, which a couple of our board members thankfully participate on as well, also through other meetings where input on district programs is received, and through our annual LCAP survey. The LCAP is compiled each year, and comments are shocking. But for this presentation today, I thought it would be a great way to close, sharing some of the comments from our parents, staff, and students, validating work happening all around our district. And so this first slide here are a few comments from our parents, and you'll notice the recognition and appreciation for staff and programs, and the great care staff put into the work of supporting our students. Here are some comments from staff, where we see positive comments around the direction of our district vision, professional learning opportunities, and once again, an appreciation for all the different programs we offer, and for the staff who are committed to student success. And lastly, there's a sampling of comments from our students, our number one customer, right? So many students sharing so many positive sentiments, but the last one was so simple and heartfelt. It reminded us of the simplest of how the simplest of actions can make such a difference in young people's lives. When asked what is the best thing at school, this student wrote of all the things that he or she could have written, "The guy who stands near the front and tells me good morning every day." Like, whoever that guy is at that school, thank you, right? We wonder if he knows what an impact he makes. And it's such a great reminder for all of us that no matter our role, we can bring positivity to a student's life. Now on to the next. We will finalize the LCAP and bring it back to our board meeting on June 30th for consideration for adoption. The county is also in the process of pre-review so that all requirements will be met for our final LCAP adoption. We will submit our LCAP to the county office, post it to the website, and work on producing the translation and infographic versions for the website in the month that follows. In closing, sounds like a whole project, right? In closing, we want to thank all of our educational partners involved in the process of developing our LCAP, the staff who helped prepare the data, as well as work translating and working on all the components of the LCAP. So thank you to our administrators and teacher leaders who volunteer to serve as discussion group facilitators and note takers to capture feedback from partners, some of whom are in this room. They're all so amazing and supportive. And of course, we thank the board for your leadership, guidance, and support. And so now we can take questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Herrera. Are there questions or comments? Ms. Fernandez, go ahead.
I just want to commend you and this district for the LCAP report. I know it's heavy reading, it's 165 pages, so the last 30 pages are kind of instruction. But I wanted to share that I love the example you used of, you know, that guy that believes in me every day, because I could physically picture like each and every school and a staff member there. And I think one of the things I've been reflecting on since this board packet is the level of pride and I think encouragement for parents who are here, but also who are going to be here in the next couple of years. And it's something that I think we as a district can be really proud of. Like, you want to send your kid here, regardless of what school. We're looking at the data, the wellness support is there, the academic success, and, you know, to the point of thinking about the trends of maybe not every student wants to go to college right away based on the, you know, there's different thoughts on it. You know, there's different trends. But the idea is that you have your options. We give as many options as possible so that you can, you know, be your best self. And just thank you for that leadership and that work, because it's not easy. But it just reads so well. Like, there's just so much positive things.
I appreciate it. We do gather so much input and feedback. I feel like the final product is really a compilation of everything I'm hearing, and so much of it I get from those meetings and from the feedback I receive. It's just amazing.
Yeah, I just wanted, you know, I was on here, and I know I commented on it at our last meeting. What a positive experience, and from everyone, you know, the students and staff and, you know, the parents, but especially, you know, our staff team, they were prepared with great comments. It's one of the most positive experiences that I have this year, and I know, you know, I came away from every meeting just really, you know, proud of what our staff and what the school is doing. And I know at our very last meeting, you know, one of the, it was Greg, who said that one of the things that his students and everyone that talked to him about it was that, you know, the whole district offers something for everyone. Not every school offers everything, but the whole district, you know, if you look at it, we are really comprehensive. And as Ms. Hernandez said, you know, there's something here where your student can be successful. And I think that, you know, ours, not only the staff, but our parents and the whole community are realizing that. So I just want to thank you personally for this, you know, really wonderful experience.
Well, I just want to ditto what everybody else said, except I still don't know how you're able to condense all of this information that's gathered over a whole year and put it into this document that is so concise, so easy to understand. And I want to thank you for that. It's one of the things I think this district does very well, is implementation of the LCAP. I was a little surprised, though, when I looked at the LCAP itself. I remember when Governor Brown and the legislature put this new LCAP into place, and that first year, I think the document was about this big, and I see how it just expands and expands. And I'm curious, who reads this? Do we know?
Who reads it? Well, the county office for sure reads it.
We get an award.
It's available publicly for anyone to read.
But this is great. This goes on our website, right?
No, it typically doesn't.
Okay. Anyway, as always, you just continue to amaze me with your ability to present both in writing and orally. Just to condense so much information into such an understandable document. Thank you.
But it's a guide. That's what's so great about this. You know, everyone needs a roadmap, and that's what this is. And, you know, we continue to meet all of what's in here. And it's a, you know, it's with the future as well. So, very impressive.
Happy to be a part of it.
So years ago, we started out with strategic planning in the late 80s and early 90s. I see heads shaking back there, yes. And we decided that our strategic planning really was
a basis for the LCAP. And so we've really built on it and been able to do that. And you've taken it far further than I think any of us anticipated. When you put the four or five or six groups of us together and then you synthesize everything, it's pretty amazing. Well, we all have the same question very much. If there's no further questions or comments. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. We appreciate it, Dr. Harris. Okay, I'll now call to order the public hearing. This is a public hearing regarding the LCAP. The public hearing will please come to order. The LCAP was enacted in 2013. We've been doing them every year ever since, and we bring them up to date. And each year we must hold the public hearing. So does anybody out there have anything to say about it besides what you've already heard? Seeing nobody running to the microphones, I'll close the public hearing. Thank you. Okay, next is the golden, I should say at the next meeting we'll actually adopt it. This time we do the public hearing on both the budget and the LCAP. The Golden Gavel Award. The approvals recommended to submit an application for the 2026 Golden Gavel Award for the Huntington Beach Union High School District Board of Trustees. And this is an action item. And this award is given probably the last 4 years, California School Boards Association. And we all wondered where in the devil it came from. But Dr. Carol Iogata found it along with our administrative staff. And we thank you. And the write-up is amazing, I thought. Thank you very much. Is there a motion to... it's up there. The motion was made by Ms. Carey. The second was by Dr. Dishno. Would anybody else like to say anything about it besides thank you? Okay, then please vote. Yes, thank you very much. Okay, next on the agenda is the Golden Bell Award. And you'll recall last year we received the coveted Golden Bell Award for the Academy for the Performing Arts. We're trying again this year because we really want to get it for our student farm. That farm is over the top wonderful. Our students are learning so much. Our students learn, but our teachers and our staff, everybody learns, and we all get to eat good, healthy food. So this is approval as recommended to submit the 2026 Golden Bell Award to the Giving Farm. It looks like there's a motion by Dr. Dishno and a second by Ms. Hernandez. Is there any discussion? Please vote. Yes, four yes. Consent calendar. As we know, the consent calendar, if anyone wishes to pull something, we can, and otherwise it's voted on without discussion vote in one motion. Does anyone wish to pull anything? Okay, thank you. Then let's have a motion. We've got one from Ms. Hernandez, seconded by Ms. Carey, and please vote. Four yeses and one absent. That included, as we said at the very beginning, we were going to send a letter on behalf of the entire board and all of us sign it, as well as our resolution. So the consent calendar included that. Now, is there any new business?
I forgot to mention this earlier, but I wanted to highlight that Westminster High School 2 weeks ago was actually given a community partnership award by the Westminster School District, so our merit students actually presented at the school board because they've been doing so much community outreach with STEM fairs and also the middle school conferences that they've been hosting with the Hispanics and Feminine Women in STEM. So it's a really good showcase of the students, and I think it speaks so highly to the level of community partnership that's there, which is a huge point of pride for the students and for the staff who may or may not have been there. Well, they said, don't tell Carolee, but it's fine. Thank you. The 7 o'clock meeting. It'd be great. I did have a question, and I may have asked this last year. Is there a way, on the note of community information and community partnership, especially as we think about acclimating our feeder districts into our high school and getting those families more comfortable and knowing what's out there. I noticed that we have a number of summer programs, and as I'm sharing it with the community, whether it's the APA summer program, one of the sports programs where we invite middle school students or younger, is there some way that as a district we can share kind of consolidated information in the spring? Because it would be really helpful for those families, because most of them don't know. And it's a really good way to ensure that they, you know, I'm just thinking about enrollment, like thinking that if they come to campus, they get familiar with it, they're more likely to succeed, they're more likely to enroll. But finding that information, even for me, is really difficult to find. And I know that that can be, we won't get everything, but it may be helpful to know.
Sure, we'll work together
for next year, yeah.
On making sure that we have it on our website in one place, or for getting it out to our feeder schools.
We have such an asset there, and I know we're trying to share more information from the Huntington Beach Adult School with our feeder district so that they know about the ESL and for the families, but especially for parents that are figuring out what to do with their kids over the summer. It can be really helpful just to know so we can get as clear as possible. There's so many good things. You've got to pick something to share, but that's okay.
I just wanted to congratulate Dr. Bryan. One of the things we just did in our most recent action, approving the consent calendar, was to approve his retirement very reluctantly and sadly. With Dr. Bryan, we wish you well in the future. You know you can always come back. The other one, in that action, we also approved the employment for promotion Casey Harrelson as the new principal of Fountain Valley High School. And I just wanted to offer congratulations to both of them.
Okay. Anything to add? Thank you. Dr. Okada.
No, thank you.
Okay. Ryan.
Expect you at the next meeting, buddy.
Okay. Thank you.
See, I'm not going to say goodbye to you until you're gone. Mrs. Green?
Thank you. Dr. Murray?
Can't top any of that, so no, thank you.
Okay. All right. Anything else? Okay, thank you very much. This meeting is adjourned. We do have signing of documents, a number of them.